I want to point out that Perek Pei Gimel is one that you probably have said numerous times. It is often read aloud in times of trouble. It is the Perek of choice for Yom HaZikaron for Chalalei Tzahal. This Perek is often read during times of trouble and war. Its historicity is a matter of dispute. It has been argued that this has been written anywhere from the days of the Maccabi all the way back to the days of the Shoftim. The reason for that is, of course, the mention of various nations, which are described, and I will soon show you selections from the Book of Judges, that indicate that this was probably written at a long, long time ago. At least some of the more recent moderns, such as Professor Kaufman, argues that this is one of our oldest Mizmorei Tehillim. Yet at the same time, it's written by Asaf, Shir Mizmor le'Asaf, and it's the last of 11 Mizmorim that were written by Asaf. And Asaf is usually seen as somebody who is rather at a later period of time, close to or if not during the period of Galut Bavel. And therefore, there is a question about why it is that he's mentioning all of these names, unless he believes that the period of time in which he is living in is not unlike the period of time of the judges, when the Israelites were trying to take a hold of Eretz Israel and were surrounded by enemies who were trying to make their settlement a figment of their imaginations and wipe them out while they're at it. So if you read about the book of Judges, you've got over and over and over again a time of the following. This was the era in which people didn't do what God wanted them to do. There was no centralized government and there was no king in Israel. Ish hayashar be'enav yaaseh. Everyone did whatever he thought was okay, influenced by the tribes amongst whom they were living and were settling. And in the process, God allowed the enemy to attack them. Horrible events would happen until God would appoint a judge. A judge was not necessarily somebody who sits at the bench. A judge was a term for a type of leader that we had, usually a military leader as well as a spiritual leader. Some of them were a little questionable. One of them, of course, is Gidon. Others are great men that are both political, military, as well as religious leaders, such as Shmuel, all of whom precede the era of David HaMelech. What we will hear here is a recollection of things that happened in the past, but that seem to be repeating themselves in the current situation in which Asaf is writing about. The incredible thing about this mizmor is that the author does not refer to himself, neither in the singular nor in the plural. There's nothing about us. There is nothing about me. Instead, it is describing a situation of Klal Yisrael by written by somebody who seems to be standing at the side and praying for them. And therefore, he begins, Elokim al domilach, al techerash, ve'al tishkot kel. Please, God, don't remain silent. And now comes that crazy word, techerash, and don't remain tishkot. Three words. To some, this is nothing more than an emphasis, and it's called an anaphora. I use a multiplicity of verbs or a multiplicity of adjectives for the sake of emphasis, almost for the sake of hyperbole. As you know, the Malbim does not take that approach. He is convinced that each of these terms means something else. La'amod dom is not only to remain silent, but it's to remain without action. And so domilach is to indicate that God neither speaks, gives no messages, nor does he seem to be doing anything. Al techerash, chiresh is somebody who is deaf, says Rabbi Shimshon Refa'eliel. And therefore it means don't make yourself as if you are deaf, as if you don't hear us. Ve'al tishkot, don't remain silent. it implies that this is a generation in which it seems that God had become quiet. There was no Navi. There's no one telling them what to do. There's nobody to guide them. They feel as if they had been abandoned. And he turns to him. Ki hine oivecha yehemayun. Look, your enemies are, and now comes that word, yehemayun. It is a double entendre, which indicates hamon. It means that they are coming en masse. But the word home also means that rush of sound, like the sound of thousands of people cheering at the same time. So what we're getting is your enemies, and please notice what happens here. It's not our enemies, it's your enemies, God. How can you remain silent? It says Rashi, anybody who attacks Israel is kivyachol attacking God himself. Because Am Yisrael and Kudsh Abrihu are one and the same. You cannot separate them, even when it seems that God has been absent. Sfono, on the other hand, looking at his period of time at the end of the Middle Ages, believes that the attack against the Jew is against his religion, and therefore the enemies of the people are the enemies of God. Umesanecha nasurosh. Please notice the lashon nofela lashon, that alliteration. Umesanecha nasurosh. That shin shin sin sound. And of course that sounds very much like a snake. Mesanecha, those who hate you have lifted up their heads. Meaning that they have now find themselves able to do what they previously could not do. What do they do? Al amcha ya'arimu sod. Orma is sly, devious. And you remember that the Nachash was the Ahum of all of the animals. He was the most devious of them all. So I didn't just think about the issue of it being like a snake. When I'm using the sounds, they slyly, deviously plot a secret. Vayityatsu al tzfunecha, and they take advice, they plan out, and now comes the question what tzfunecha means. Safun is usually something hidden. But it's not their hidden secret and their hidden plot. It's they are plotting on against your hidden ones. Because Am Yisrael is kibayachol under God's wing. We are hidden under his wing. But we are also partners to his secrets. And his secrets is the Torah and the mitzvahs that protect us. Again, the notion that those that are attacking us are attacking our religion, which would have been true when you talked about the church, when you talked about the Inquisition. There, the purpose of anti-Semitism was to make us become Christians like them. Or if they were idolaters, for us to give up our religion and put Jupiter into the Beit HaMikdash. That doesn't seem to be only the purpose here, because he adds, Amru, they said, they thought, they plotted and planned. Lechu, let's go. V'nachidei migoy, and we will eradicate them from being a nation. So if I view this only as to say that Jews are not a nationality, at best, we are a religion. They are now attacking not only our religion, but also our national aspirations. Ve'lo yizacher shem Yisrael od, and the name of Israel will no longer be remembered. In other words, now we're no longer talking about simply trying to convert us to their way, but to commit complete genocide, to kill us. Whether or not we consider ourselves Jews, even if we convert to Christianity, they will murder us. And now we've moved from another level completely. No longer is this an attempt simply to change our beliefs. No longer is this attempt just to take away our country and our sense of nationhood. But now it is, in fact, to kill us just because. Who are they? Kinoatsu lev echad. They advised, gathered together, schemed and planned to be with one heart. And interestingly, these are people who previously and afterwards will fight with one another. The Iraqis will fight against the Iranians, the Shiites against the Sunnis, the Christians against the Muslims, the Protestants against the Catholics. Ah, but in this case, they are unified by one thing only, lev echad. What is it? Alecha brit yichotu. They have made a covenant, a treaty amongst them to go alecha. Alecha means against you. For that, they seem to have been unified. The only thing holding them together is their common hatred. Who are they? Ohalei Edom v'Yishmaelim. The tents of Edom and the Yishmaelites. Moab v'Hagrim. Hagrim are the descendants of Hagar, other than Yishmael. For those who say that Keturah, the wife that Abraham took after Sarah's death, was none other than Hagar, it is the children that she bore with Abraham. Then Edom, Yishmaelim, Moab, coming from Lot, all are Mishpuche. They all come from Terach, remember? And from there, from Abraham. And all of these people are doing what? Says the, why do I mention only with regards to Edom, Ohalim? Is it Ohalei Edom ve'Yishmaelim Moab ve'Hagrim, that the tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites and Moab and Hagrim? That would imply that all of these people were people that were tent dwellers. They're Bedouin tribes that moved around in both sides of the Jordan River and were strongly put out by the Jews coming from Mitzrayim and settling into the promised land. Their beef is that they believed that they were the only heirs. Each of them wanted to be the one and only heirs. You've got Ammon over here, Rabbat Ammon, which today is the capital of Jordan. Moab is south of that. Edom is on this side. Amorim are not mentioned. Yevusim are not mentioned. Amalekim are mentioned. And Plishtim are mentioned. The Philistines that are being shown here settled along this entire area. The Plishtim are people that come from the Isles, from Crete and the Aegean Sea. They are essentially related to the Greeks. They are not unrelated. They actually join together with the people up north. Are Sidon and So, I should say. This is what we know as the capitals of Phoenicia. But later on, the Phoenicians join hand in hand with the Philistines. The Phoenicians became great people, seafaring people, and essentially controlled the entire coastline of the Mediterranean. Plishtim that came from the Isles, the Greek Isles, settled along this coastline when, in fact, the Isles became overpopulated. So they are here, we know, of course, from Plishtim already in the days of Avraham Avinu. They're beginning to settle here, and they're the ones that keep on attacking us. They have nothing in common, not ethnically, not in their religion, not in their language, in their written language, with any of these peoples who are Semites. These are not Semites at all. But they have one thing in common, and that is to wipe out the Jews that are here. That is the only thing that unites them. Of course, if they could succeed in doing that, they'll start fighting with each other. Comes the next, Gvol, the Amon, the Amalek. Gvol are the people that live up in Lebanon. Think of Hezbollah. Ammon, Amalek. Amalek were nothing more than landless people that actually roamed all over the place. They are descendants of Esau. And we know them today as simply people who hate the Jews because they're Jews. That's sufficient for them. Pleshet. Pleshet is Philistines. Im Yoshvei Tzor, with those that live up in Tyre, they created an alliance. An alliance which, of course, makes no sense. It's very much like Lebanon together with Egypt. They've got nothing in common except one thing. Gam Ashur Nilva Imam. And the Assyrians, who have not yet risen up to become the great empire, also join up with them. Hayu Zroa Livnei Lot Sela. They all became the arm of the sons of Lot. The sons of Lot, of course, the descendants of Lot are Ammon and Moab, who seem to be the instigators and are joined by the other people with the purpose of wiping them out, or as they said nowadays, throw them into the sea. So all we're doing is we're describing a scenario that occurred when Am Yisrael settled Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yehoshua and continued for a few hundred years as they tried to get a grip on the land, being constantly attacked over and over and over again. Some of these names we know from the book of Shoftim. Some we don't know from the book of Shoftim. And therefore the argument was, when was this written? Frankly, I don't believe the question is about when it was written. I think somebody here is doing a scan of our history. But for you to get a sense of this, I am going to share with you the sources in the book of Shoftim. And this will prepare you for the second half. Vayosifu bnei Yisrael lasot hara b'nei Hashem, just like it always begins, almost every chapter in the book of Judges begins this way. Yep, no sooner things get settled down, we're fine for a little while, and then sure enough, they began to do bad in the eyes of God, thinking they could manage without him and do it on their own. And by now, Ehud, who had been the previous shofet, died. Vayimkarem Hashem biyad Yavin melech Kenan. Yavin is the king of the Canaanites, who rules out of Chatzor, Chatzor HaGlilit, right near Tzfat. Vesar Tzvao, and his captain, or the head of his army, is Sisra. You all know that story. He lives in Haroshet HaGoyim. So we're talking about the area between Haifa, Tzfat, essentially the area of Emek Yisrael. Vayitzaku bnei Yisrael el Hashem. When things got bad enough, they started crying out to God again. Kitshamot Rechev Barzelo, because he had 900 iron chariots. And for 20 years he oppressed them, meaning forcing them to pay tribute. He would take all of the crops that they had grown, impoverishing them completely when they could no longer take it. Of course, you will remember the story of Dvorah and Barak. And she gathers together an army. And what happens finally is as they approach the area of the valley, Vayaham Hashem et Sisra, Chazal tell us that a major storm broke out when you least expected it, turning the area into mud, and of course the horses could not pull the chariots that were stuck in the mud, and therefore Barak with his rather paltry army managed to overcome the 900 chariots. Sisra, as you will remember, fled his chariot, ran away from his horse that was stuck, and fled. He was later on, if you remember, killed by none other than a woman, Yael. Ubarak radaf acharei harechef. Barak chases after him. Entire army of Sisra were all wiped out. So in fact, what happened was that we were a bunch of tribes, each of them taking care of their own little tiny territory and not concerned with what happens to everybody else. Therefore, we see this happening again and again. Now comes chapter 6. Vayasu bnei Yisrael hara b'nei Hashem, vayitnem Hashem b'yad Midian. Sheva Shanim. Now we've got the Midianites. You remember that it was Yael herself who came from Hever HaKeni, who was from the Midianites. Some of the Midianites joined up with us and became monotheists and actually converted. Others remained Midianites. Midianites lived in the area of the Sinai, and they had their eyes on this land as well. Vata'az yad Midian al Yisrael, and they became prevailing over them. And therefore, what did they do? Because of their constant raids, what did they do? They made themselves minharot baharim. They made themselves caves in the mountains. Yeah, they had, in fact, what we would think of as bunkers. Vetamarot, vetamitzudot, and they built themselves fortresses, all because they were constantly being raided by the Midianim. Vehayayim zarah Yisrael, and when the Israelites had sown their fields, ala Midian ve'amalek ubnei kedem, the Midianites and the Amalekim and the rest of the Bnei Kedem are people from the east, and they would come and raid those fields. Vayachanu alehem, vayashchitu et yivul ha'aretz, and whatever they didn't take, they burned, and they create scorched earth. And they scorched the entire land ad bo'acha Aza, until you came to Aza. And they managed to make destroying, ve'lo yashiru michya b'Yisrael, and made sure that there was no food. V'seh, v'ashor, v'chamor, killing whatever it was, hoping that they could starve the Jews out of the land of Israel. Well, at that point, we have a new leader. A leader of a questionable background. Vayavo Gidon, u'mea ish asher ito. I won't go through the whole thing about how he was appointed. But finally, he only chose the best of the brightest, if you like, the commandos of 100 men, and they came to Ashmoret HaTichona. They came to the middle watch at middle of the night on the camps of the Midianites, and what did they do? They created this loud noise, a little bit about like the Davidka that we did in 1948, using all of these noise and lights at night and blasting pottery on them, terrifying everyone. And the Midianites, not knowing how many people are attacking them, ran up and fled. And what happens then is they manage to gather up all of the people from Naphtali, Asher, Menashe, and they pursued after the Midianites. Gideon went sent messengers to tribes of Ephraim and says, come on down, let's take them as far as we can. Cut off their control of the waters, because they controlled the waters of Israel. Finally took the two princes of Midian, Orev and Ze'ev, which by the way means a raven and a wolf. Vayahargu et Orev b'tzu Orev, ve'et Ze'ev hargu b'yekev Ze'ev, vayirdifu el Midian, chasing them to the other side of the Jordan, brought back their heads to Gidon. Comes the next part of our perek. Aseh lahem. Please notice we're talking to God. Do to them as you did to Midian. Do to them as you did to Midian. Kesisra, keyavin benachal Kishon. Kishon is a small stream today that runs through the area where the battle was and spills out into the Mediterranean. In times of great rain, which of course occurred in the days of Sisra, that thing became full, and the entire area became a swamp, if you like, which, by the way, parts of it today are back as a swamp, and it is a bird preserve. Nishmedu be'ein dor. I won't go into the exact area where ein dor is, because ein dor is not mentioned in Shoftim. It's mentioned in other places, but we know where ein dor is, and it's close by to the Charoshet HaGoyim, where Sisra lived. They were all wiped out in Ein Dor. Hayu domen le'adama. Again, you can't miss the play on the sounds, right? The alliteration. Domen le'adama. They became nothing more than fertilizer for the soil. Shitemo nidivemo. This is a poetic form that you saw in Aziashil. And Nadiv is a philanthropist in modern language, but it also means the people that are empowered, those that hold the money. Ke'orev u'kezeev, make their leaders like Orev v'Ze'ev. So whoever we're talking about now, we're not talking about Midian itself. We're saying make them like Midian and cut off their heads. Ukezevach, ukezalmuna, those were additional princes of the Canaanites. Kon nesichemo, all their princes, all of whom, of course, were killed and beheaded. Asher amru, why do I ask you that you wipe them out? For they said, meaning they plotted, their plan was, nirshalanu et neot elokim, let's inherit for ourselves the oases of God. Neot elokim also can refer to the holy places of God, but it in fact means the places where, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is seen as our shepherd and we are his sheep, the places that he brought us to drink, to eat from, the land that he gave us is seen as the oases in which God had settled us, he being our shepherd. Elokai shitemu kegalgal. And only here is there a reference, our God. Make them as a galgal. A galgal is simply a tumbleweed. It is something that rolls when it's cut off from its root in the desert, blown by the wind, kegash lifnei ruach, like so much straw before the wind. Keesh tivarya. Now that he's used the imagery of a tumbleweed, a dried up plant that cuts off from its root and rolls with the wind, which is easily flammable, make them burn, but burn like a forest fire in which one tree burns the other, spreading it from one to the other, asking God, have them attack one another. So when we see Shiites killing Sunnis, we should thank the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, and keep them off our backs. So they should kill themselves all up. He says, and as a flame that can burn up mountains. Anybody who's ever seen a forest fire in a mountainous area burning up, if you've ever been to places like Mount St. Helens or other areas, and if you've seen the forest fires that occurred in the northern part of Israel, you can imagine this. So shall you pursue them with your storm. Again, referring to the storm that occurred in the days of Sisra, but asking God for a, if you like, a natural event to bring them down. I wonder. Ubesufatcha tivhalem, and a sufa is a whirlwind. Terrify them with a whirlwind, just as you did in the days of Sisra. Male pnehem kalon, have their faces filled up with embarrassment, shame. But interestingly, he doesn't ask for genocide. Vayivakshu shimcha Hashem. So that they too will ask for your name, Hashem. And that name, by the way, did you notice that up until now we only refer to him as Elohim, Midas Hadin. And now they will ask for your name of Midas Harachamim, saying you're Jews. You don't believe in vengeance, right? Have rachmunas. Oh God, vayevoshu v'yibahalu adayad. Let them be shamed and afraid forevermore. Vayachperu. Now, cherpa is another word for shame. Lachfor is to dig. If you've ever been embarrassed and you say, if only I could dig a hole and bury myself in it, that's vayachperu, vayovedu. And may they be lost, lost to history, no longer here amongst us. But some will survive, because if they were completely lost, the next line would make no sense. Ve'yedu, so that they will know, ki ata shimcha Hashem levadecha, that your name is Yudke Vavke. You were, you are, you will be, and are the only one. Elyon, superior, above all, kol ha'aretz, all of the earth, not only Eretz Yisrael, but over the entire humanity, that you are the God above it. No longer is this simply a message of fight my enemies for me, get rid of them for me. It's bring the whole world to see that you are the one God. Why does he want this? Because the enemies that are mentioned here come from the same roots that we do. They are the children of Abraham. They are the children of Yitzchak. They come from Terach just like we do. And we have a concern of two kinds. The first one we say, Aleinu leshabeach ladon nakol latet dura liyotzer bereshit. We are different from all other people. But the second half you say, Al ken nekave, therefore we hope for the days when all peoples of the earth will recognize one God. And so we're not looking to wipe out these people as they look to wipe us out. We are looking instead for them to recognize that there is only one God who is over all of us and that they are accountable to him. Now you understand why this is read on Yom HaZikaron for Chayalei Tzahal, who face these enemies, who have to go out there and be our heroes, who give up their lives. And that's why we also read this at the time whenever there is Chas V'Shalom war in Eretz Yisrael, and everybody gets together to say Tehillim, you'll see that this mizmor is always said. So today is Chag HaAtzma'ut, but you know that Chag HaAtzma'ut brought upon it, at the same time, a coalition enemies that have nothing in common with themselves, except one thing, to throw us into the sea. That coalition, Baruch Hashem, is falling apart at the seams.